Robots, textiles, drones, houses, whether it's high-tech or low-tech, all of these are things you make, things you build with your hands. And right now is a great time to be a maker in Kansas City. While it's a fuzzy definition, makers can be classified as tinkerers, hackers, skilled tradespeople, and even technologists. A lot of people believe making something is essential to what it means to be human, and that makers will innovate and transform how we live, how we work and play. Here to talk about the maker movement is Luis Rodriguez. He works for Ultimaker, a leading manufacturer of 3D printers. Previously, he worked for the Kauffman Foundation, which helped bring the Maker Faire to Kansas City. He joins us by Skype from D.C., where his flight was canceled yesterday. And Luis, good morning to you.
Good morning.
Here in the studio with me, Nick Ward Bopp is a maker and the co-founder of the Maker Village KC at 31st and Cherry. He also runs the Black and Veatch Makerspace at the main branch of the Johnson County Public Library. Nick, good morning to you.
Thanks.
Mark Daner is also here. He's director of real estate for a tech shop. That's one of the biggest chains of member-based workshops in the country. He lives in Kansas City. Mark, good morning to you.
Good morning.
Later, we'll talk about how you can get involved in the maker movement at the Maker Faire at Union Station. Luis, let's start with the basics here. We mentioned before that makers are loosely defined. For you, what is a maker?
So, you know, I think in the Midwest, we have a strong tradition of making. I mean, you know, for me, my grandparents were, on my mother's side, farmers in the Midwest. They made out of necessity. And some people now argue we've moved away from that, that this is now a new movement when really it's been here all along. We're just finding it. So you're right when you describe it as traditional skills and fabrication, but now we have the luxury of digital fabrication skills like CNC machines and 3D printers. But, you know, I actually was at, excuse me, Union Station for almost 4 years. And
right.
we spent a long time actually teaching kids and their parents how to use hammers. I mean, it's that simple. These are skills that people will use.
You know, this idea strikes me, Mark, as pretty old-fashioned. I'm thinking blacksmiths. I'm thinking about carpenters. Am I right?
Yeah. I mean, it was survival 100 years ago.
That's right.
And then in the 80s and the late 20th century, we really took workshops out of schools.
That's right.
So all that went away unless you lived on a farm.
Mm-hmm.
So this isn't just a fad. This is truly a movement. It started, the whole make term came from Make Magazine, which started in January of 2005. And it was an idea that Dale Doherty and Dan Woods came up with to kind of bring together sort of the popular mechanics of our age and make it more interactive. And it was the next year in 2006 that they started Maker Faire. That has, you know, we're now into an age where everybody's trying to not go backwards in time, but now trying to link steelworking, woodworking, electronics, robotics, textiles, computer hacking, all into one. So it really brings together the soft arts and the hard arts, and it's intergenerational.
So, Nick, at its core, we're seeing a rebound here when it comes to making stuff in this country. Why?
Well, I would totally agree with Mark, and I would also say that, you know, with the high school shops and middle school shops disappearing...
Are they coming back?
Well, the Johns County Library, where I work, you know, they are fully committed to this idea of the maker movement. In one way, bringing the Black and Veatch makerspace to everybody is a way, a big way that it's rebounding. If libraries get in on this, and that will completely remove the barriers to the maker movement. There are so many people who can't afford the equipment that we're talking about. And if libraries get in, then it opens it up for everybody.
So you're talking about libraries adding workshops behind the bookshelves they already have.
Exactly. Exactly.
Wow.
It's a resource. It's a resource. That's all it is. You know, as books are still really popular, but more people go to the internet to find information. The library is a safe space. It's a place for resources, for learning, and it's just taking a different spin at that.
Luis, what do you think we miss out on by not building and making things ourselves?
Well, you know, so there's a fun make term that says if you can't open it, you don't own it. And that's the way it used to be. If something broke in your car, you know, at least I had uncles and a grandfather who would open up the hood and you would, you know, get into it to understand how it works. So a common theme in a lot of maker projects are kits. And the idea is, in the process of building, you understand its function and then can build upon it. So, you know, open source is a common thread through many different things. There's a open source hardware group in Kansas City that, you know, tries to promote that. But you really want to learn how things work. I mean, we all know the way kids are. You know, I used to take apart the knobs in the house because I wanted to know how those worked, you know.
Right.
And in a way, we've gotten a little bit too safe, and we don't want, you know, kids to get hurt. Nobody wants anyone to get hurt. But, you know, there's something that comes from a kid holding a saw in his hand, a hammer. And now we just have, like Nick said, more tools and resources now. You know, we have 6th, 7th, 8th, 8-year-olds that are learning to 3D print and 3D model things because they've grown up in a world of video games and apps. And now these tools are showing up in those areas.
You know, it's amazing to me, Mark, how far away we've gotten from some of this. I remember moving into my neighborhood. I live in Westwood on the Kansas side. We moved in 20 years ago, and stuff was all packed away, and I needed some basic wrench to do something around the house. And I went around the neighborhood and knocked on a couple of doors, like nobody had anything close to what I was looking for. And I'm hardly a DIY guy, you know, so we've really gotten away from it.
And so what the maker movement does is it brings people together as a community.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we go – when we talk about the maker movement
– not my community, by the way, but maybe it'll change. Yeah.
It will change.
Yeah.
And I think we're all talking about this broadening group of populace in the United States. When you go to a shop that we're talking about, there's a variety of them that are from small shops. Nick has a great community shop that he's built that he can talk about. And then you have larger shops that are like a tech shop is 20,000 square feet, and it's got a variety of tools. Mm-hmm. Then we have shop here in Kansas City being built at UMKC called the Free Enterprise Center. You know, each one of these are going to offer a different set of tools, and people come for the tools, they think. But what you need is the training and the education. And the third piece –
And you can get that too.
You get that. And then the third piece is there's events and activities that take place there that the broader community can take, can take part of. And so we come for the equipment. We come for the skills. Really what we're coming for is the socialization and the experience of being part of the community.
That's really interesting. Nick, tell us about the Maker Village KC at 31st and Cherry. You're a co-founder of that. What is it in layman's terms here?
Yeah, so I kind of got into the maker movement by rehabbing, DIY, fixing up a building, and it was really out of necessity. I needed to know how to use a planer, how to use a joiner to take an old stud wall and make it into a table. We were running on no money and just kind of learning as we went, and that's what we realized is it would be awesome to have a community shop to go and get access to that equipment, not just the equipment, but the knowledge. So that project was called the Jarbo Initiative, and now that's led us to Maker Village, and we should be opening in January.
And it'll be what, a tool repository?
So basically,
a workshop?
It's a sandbox. It's a sandbox with a bunch of really expensive wood and metalworking equipment, and you have a couple people there where you sign up, say you show up on a Saturday, and you'll be able to get access to wood and metalworking equipment, but also instruction on how to take on your weekend project.
So what's the difference between you and my favorite hardware store?
We can actually teach you how to make the table, make the side table. And you walk in with nothing, maybe some wood, and then you walk out with that knowledge, that gratification, and a table.
That's really interesting. And then there's the whole high-tech aspect to all of this, Luis, and advanced equipment. Tell us about how that's entering into all this thing.
Well, so Mark was right that all of this sort of started with Make Magazine and Maker Faire, and we started to see projects sort of coalesce and come together at these events. And, you know, things like 3D printing arose because, honestly, big patents from big industry went away. And then, you know, makers were allowed to sort of experiment in this space. So what that means is now we have desktop machines that are, you know, now equivalents of machines that are $10,000 or $100,000.
Mm-hmm.
And so that means we now have these high-tech tools. So we now have desktop laser cutters. We have desktop CNC machines. We have desktop 3D printers. And all that means from a hobbyist to a professional, you know, engineer manufacturer is they can go quickly to market, whether that's a market of one and I just need a hook to hang in my bathroom, or it's a local startup who's doing, you know, an electronics enclosure for a guitar, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It just means these tools help you produce what you're after faster. And the most important part of the digital fabrication era is that rapid iteration. I can do multiple revisions, you know, in a couple hours or a couple days versus, you know, what used to be maybe a 3-month turnaround for sending something out to a factory.
Well, Nick, so at the Maker Village KC, how much of this high-tech equipment will you have there once you guys get going?
We won't. So the digital fabrication, you know, the places to go for that in Kansas City are going to be Hammer Space. They're amazing. The Johnson County Library Makerspace is great. The Metropolitan Community College Fab Lab down in the East Bottoms.
These places have this equipment, you're saying.
Exactly. And part of that, you know, a lot of people want to get involved in the maker movement. They don't know where these things are. So education is something that we all share as a responsibility to get that information out. But at Maker Village, we're going to have the big, expensive, old school equipment that you can't fit in your garage.
Like the high school wood shop.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah, big planers, big band saws, big panel saws. It's stuff that people need in North Hyde Park and Hyde Park and our at downtown, people who live in the small apartment and would never be able to fit any of that equipment or afford any of that equipment.
There's nothing like the smell of like a sander or a planer, and I love how that used to permeate my house. My dad was a DIY guy like crazy. If you want to join our conversation, we're talking about this maker movement here and how it might apply to you. 816-235-2888 is our phone number here. Again, 816-235-2888, or you can tweet us at KCUR up to date. Luis, has the experience of making things changed the way you've approached other aspects of your life?
Yeah, I mean, I was lucky that, well, I suppose when I was in high school, some of the shop was starting to dwindle away. We had a full shop, but they started to restrict and move tools away. And so this has sort of rekindled that, which is the effect that they want, you know, worldwide, getting your hands dirty. It certainly saves you money when you can fix things yourself, but it also is freeing to think that if I do need the kind of equipment that Nick is talking about, I can go there.
Mm-hmm.
If I do need a laser cutter, I can go to Johnson County Library.
Right.
If I need to go talk to an expert in person about PCB production, I'll go to Hammer Space in Brookside. And Mark's right. It's really about the community of experts that all sort of share in this philosophy. We're not really competitors against each other. We just all sort of serve on the same pipeline of talent. You know what? The reason the Kauffman Foundation got involved is it directly affects education and entrepreneurship. All the components are there. If somebody wants to take advantage of it, they can take these little kits and hobby projects and turn it into, you know, a business. And that's been done. It's not, you know, easy like starting any business, but now the tools are there to help accelerate that.
You know, Luis, you've worked, you work for a 3D printing manufacturer, and I'm wondering how has the ability to print in 3D affected the entire maker movement here? How much fuel is that providing this thing?
Well, so it's definitely one of the most popular tools. It maybe, you know, gets too much of the attention because, you know, sometimes part of my job is saying, no, it's not effective to print that in plastic. That's really should be done in metal. This company, Ultimaker, is a Dutch 3D printer company. They're a story that I love to tell because it was three guys in a hackerspace that started fooling around with a laser cutter to improve on an existing printer. And now, you know, 6 years later, they have 200 employees.
Mm-hmm.
So not easy, definitely possible. It's certainly one of the sexier technologies that gets touted. And I'm surprised more and more as I work at different events and kids come into our booth and people, they say, oh, I've seen that on TV.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen that in magazines, but it's not yet Star Trek, but it is pretty empowering to be able to, you know, within a you know, an hour, design something that you need and print it and see if it works. But I think it, where it's useful is where you start combining it with all the other tools you have. So,
yeah. Well, Nick, where are you getting the money to fuel Maker Village KC and all this big equipment you want to bring in there?
Well, it's taken us about 3 years to open, and we're not yet open. My partner is
You're opening what you said when?
January.
January, yeah. So it's still a few months away.
My partner is an engineer at Burns & McDonnell, and you know, I work at the library. So we live in the basement of the building.
Right.
We have one truck. We pour every resource we can into the rehabilitation and into the business. So it is a lifestyle business, is what we've been called by the business juggernauts.
In what sense?
We're not going to expand and be able to scale and have a million in sales. It's more of, you know, we're building something to be there for 60 to 80 years, and it takes a long time to build something like that.
And the money, the revenue that will come to keep you guys going comes from where?
Oh, that will be, we'll be open on the weekends. We'll also be
people open. Pay to come.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Okay.
So if you want the free, go to the library. If you want to go get access to the big equipment, come to Maker Village.
Let's go to some phone calls here as we talk about the Maker Movement in Kansas City, the burgeoning Maker Movement. Let's go to Joe from North Kansas City. Joe, you're on Up Today. Good morning.
Hi, great. This is a great topic. I'm a teacher, and the Maker Movement is slowly permeating schools, and I use it in my classroom. And it's really powerful learning for the kids, because not only do they get to create, but they have to go through the design process of defining and ideating and prototyping and testing and all that great stuff. So I think it's a really, really powerful thing for the community, not just for like the DIY weekend people, but also for kids and students too.
Well, to what extent, Joe, has you know, wood shop and metal shop left the high schools? Are you seeing a return of that stuff?
Actually, I teach middle school, but all my high school colleagues, that's like one of the first things to go, or I guess was one of the first things to go.
Right.
It's been a while now, but I think this kind of fills a gap, because there's a lot of technology coming out, like the 3D printers and things that can make it, like your guest said, just you have an idea and an hour later it's real.
Right, right. I'm glad you called, Joe. Thanks very much. Let's go to Tim from Independence. Tim, you're on Up Today. Good morning.
Hey, good morning. How are you?
I'm well, thanks.
Hey, listen, I love the whole vibe, and I own the Urban Lumber Company, and what we do is, you know, we sell urban wood that would be normally turned into mulch, and we turn it into projects, and I see every front of this, and it's so real, and it's so great, and everybody loves it, and so I'm happy to support it, and I'm happy to talk about it.
Oh, that's great, Tim. I appreciate it. And I was going to ask Mark Daner, again, Director of Real Estate for Tech Shop. That's one of the biggest chains of member-based workshops in the country. What kind of growth are you guys seeing?
Well, there's growth all over the world.
Mm-hmm.
Tech Shop itself has grown from the United States at over 8 facilities. And, mm-hmm. and by the way, I'm past director of real estate.
Okay.
But spent the last 5 years going all over the country. And you see it there isn't a city that's not talking about it. There's not a corporation that's not interested in it. There's not a university that's not engaging. All the engineering schools, business schools are building maker spaces. If you look at, you know, a great example was, you know, one of the largest where Fab Lab came out of was MIT's Media Lab. At MIT, there was a study done that there were over 200,000 square feet of shop space on campus. But none of them, well, very little, less than 20,000 square feet was considered makerspace, where it's open access. Anybody can come in anytime and do things.
Mm-hmm.
It's always closed access. That's the differentiation here. Campuses all over the country, from University of Utah to a number of campuses in New York to LA, it doesn't, you know, to Kansas City at UMKC, we're building these facilities. Most of them are still closed access, where you have to be a student, you have to go through a program to get in.
Well, isn't that because of liability coverage and insurance? That's going to be the big issue here, isn't it?
It's a big issue. And so, you know, there's a difference between a community makerspace where it's literally the community teaching each other peer-to-peer versus the institutional grade, if I can say it that way, of somebody like TechShop or a company like TechShop that's got, an extensive protocol and training facility. And so they've created the curriculum that they can now not only take for themselves inside their own shops, but share with others. So we need to broaden that market and that training, because training is critical in the oversight. Mm-hmm. A facility like a tech shop has 15 full-time employees and 20 part-time trainers and educators that come in. So it's a very intensive, both capital intensive as well as personnel intensive program. And with that, you know, everybody's trying to seek how fast can we grow them. And there's the communities that are growing them just like Nick's, as well as more institutional grades that are 20,000 square feet, whereas right. Nick's is 2,000 square feet, like right. a tech shop.
Yeah, that's so interesting. Louise, hop in here. What are you seeing on along those lines?
Well, you know what, I keep thinking that we still haven't hit what the end goal for Kansas City is.
Right.
We have lots of spaces that are, you know, we could have 100 of these and still not serve all the population. I mean, we have enough to serve in certain areas, but I'd love to see more of these in rural areas who have always embraced VOTEC and tech education.
So, Luis, let me cut you off. So a maker city is what exactly?
Well, so that's when you get support. And I'm not suggesting we're not. When you get support from the government, chambers of commerce, they all work together because they see this as a source of innovation.
And have you guys asked the city for financial support yet to fuel this movement? Luis, have you guys asked the city for financial support?
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah. So. Yeah. Last year, I believe it was Obama asked all the mayors, about 100 of them, to sign sort of a maker pledge. Mm-hmm. And Sly did do that. And part of it was supporting maker spaces, supporting maker fair. We're certainly well on our way. I look at spaces like Dew Space in Omaha, which is an incredible public resource that's in a former 5-story Borders bookstore. Mm-hmm. Or in Arkansas, they have the Arkansas Regional Innovation Hub. And it very well may be that this new space in UMKC helps do some of that. I mean, we heard from the teacher who's doing it for middle schoolers. Nick and I both serve a wide range. Tech Shop serves a wide range. We have such a tremendous resource for entrepreneurs that I think we could still have a large gathering place that might, right. you know, coalesce these things together. I think we're well on our way, but Maker City is sort of it's a vision that lots of cities are striving for.
And Nick, a city benefits from that designation, from that emphasis. How?
Oh man, entrepreneurship, innovation,
job creation. Hopefully,
yeah. And job creation comes out of that. And I think gratification. People finding something that they're passionate in. There's so many people in the United States that are unemployed or underemployed or just working a day job. And the
idea, looking to make something as a, you know, symbol of self-worth and all those kinds of
exactly.
things.
Exactly. Right? I mean, yeah. we get dubbed the instant gratification generation. And this is a way that makes that a very productive slogan, I guess.
Let me go back to some phone calls. Karen from Olathe. Karen, you're on Up to Date.
Hi there. Hey, talking about all of that open access and the ability for more people to get involved, I just wanted to put in one more plug for libraries, and they're part of the Maker movement. You know, libraries have always been about open access, and whether that's information and newspapers and books, and then moving into computers for people who didn't have them, and now moving into, you know, having amazing things like the Johnson County Library and school libraries, too, that are starting to put these makerspaces in. It's just a great way for people to be able to have access to these exciting tools.
And Karen, what is the Johnson County Public Library doing now along these lines?
Oh, it's amazing. I take my 12-year-old son there, and he likes to make like Pokemon things like that on the 3D printer. But while we're there, we get to talk with artists who are using the laser cutter. We get to watch homeschool kids who are learning how to use a soldering iron. And I mean, it's a really dynamic place.
And where is this? What's the location of what you're talking about here?
Oh, 87th and...
At the main library?
Yeah, 87th and Antioch.
The big main library, sure. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And there are people there who help, and they're just so excited to show young kids and older people and everybody just to help them figure out how to use these tools. And you get so much inspiration from watching the other people and what they're making themselves.
Karen, I'm really glad you called. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Let me go to Larry from Overland Park. Larry, you're on the show.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
Say, I really like the idea of the maker spaces and the function, and people can get in, use the 3D printers, create things. I'm a mechanical engineer, and I do product design and development.
Mm-hmm.
So it just, there's one thing that concerns me is it tends to minimize the effort it takes to design a product and get it into the market. So you can spend an hour, as somebody said, designing something and then go print it and see if it works. Doesn't mean you manufacture it. Doesn't mean it'll actually serve the intended function. So there's a gap there that I really wish could be filled somehow, as opposed to the art side, and I design it and I make it, and that's great.
Nick?
Casey SourceLink has an awesome resource. It's called the Resource Rail, and it is to help people who take that first stage, that early stage idea that is an hour-long designed prototype, then take it to manufacturing. So what do you need to do? And there's a bunch of institutions, private companies as well, on that Resource Rail that will tell you where to go to help you talk to a Chinese manufacturer or a regional manufacturer and redesign your product for
that's
that.
So interesting. I'm glad you called, Larry. Yeah.
Okay, one more thing.
If yes, quickly.
If you go to the manufacturer, you're not really getting what you need. You need to have engineering support, not manufacturing support. Big gap there, too. Anyway, I've lived it.
Agreed, yes.
Right. Thank you, Larry.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Mary from Overland Park. Mary, you're on Up to Date.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I am an almost 72-year-old retired psychologist. I have been reading the Maker magazine almost from the beginning, and the Ready Made magazine that used to be in production. And I just love this idea of this Maker village.
Oh, I think it's fascinating. I can't get over it.
Yeah, I've made tables and shelving and house rehab, removing non-load-bearing walls, and I just love this. And maybe about 10 years ago when someone asked me what I wanted for my birthday, I asked for a table saw, and my kids are still laughing about that.
That's awesome.
Good for you, Mary. I appreciate it. I should point out that Maker Faire will be this Saturday and Sunday at Union Station. Tons to see and do. More information, go to MakerFaireKC.com. That's Maker, FAIREKC.com. Tickets are available at boxoffice.unionstation.org. So lots more there. We'll try to get that link up on our website later on today. I want to thank our good guests today, Luis Rodriguez, Nick Ward-Bopp, and Mark Daner. You guys were great. Interesting stuff. A lot of it new to me. Appreciate the conversation.
Thanks, Steve.
Okay,
thank
you. Guys. You bet.
Thanks, Steve.